Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined today on a special bonus episode by a young man called Sam Ricketts. Hello, Sam.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. Sam, you got in touch with me after listening to us talk about referees in episode 43 because it struck a particular chord with you. And we're going to talk a lot about your experiences as a young referee. But firstly, tell us a bit about yourself. Where are you from? What do you do? How long have you been a football fan? That kind of thing.
I'm 16 years old. I'm from Devon, which is a far way away from Spurs. But my mum and her family are originally from North London.
So, okay.
I'm a Spurs fan through them. And me and my dad try and get up semi-regularly to watch them, which is great. So I've been a football fan. When I was younger, I didn't actually used to like football that much, which is surprising. But I'd say I started getting into football. It was that the penultimate AVB season where Bale was the player that, you know, you often talk about what player made you fall in love with football. Bale was definitely the player for me.
I think you're not alone there. I think a lot of fans started following Spurs at those times because it was so exciting to watch. So have you been playing football for a while as well?
Yes, I play every weekend for my local, well, semi-local team. Obviously I'm a football player and fan first. And referee second.
Yeah. So playing football, I think, is a fairly normal thing for a 16-year-old to do. But refereeing, I would say, is definitely less standard. That's not what most people would be doing at your age. What made you think about becoming a referee?
Well, so about last year at school, we had a work experience, like week, where we had a week off timetable and going doing work experience. And I had nothing ready. And one day my PE teacher, who also does all the football stuff at school, he said, like, anyone who hasn't sorted anything out, and if they fancy doing something, come and see me. So me and a couple of my friends who also hadn't sorted anything out, went and saw him, and he said he's thinking of putting on a referee course for work experience. And so I was like, yeah, I love that because, you know, it's a job, you get paid, it's quite good pay. And it's football. I love football. Like, everything seemed good.
Nice. So it all came about through a teacher just kind of throwing the idea out there. I can imagine, like, when you're at school and you're doing work experience, normally it's like you go and work in an office, or you go, in my case, it was actually working for a catering company. So it's things like that. The idea of doing something in the world of football must have been quite exciting. So I can definitely see why that would have appealed. Do you remember what the training was like to do it?
Yeah, so it was the work experience, it was a week long, but the actual course itself was only 2 or 3 days. So we went over just everything to do with refereeing, basically. They got in I'm not sure what his position was, but someone from the Devon FA came in, you know, showed us the ropes. We did lots of practical kind of stuff because my school's got an AstroTurf, and we did lots of practice on there, linesman practice, referee practice, some theory stuff in the classroom. room. He basically just took us through all the rules, everything. So that was it was fun, actually. I enjoyed it.
It must have been quite intense, because I think that the laws of the game, I mean, if you ever delve into the laws of the game, there's so much more to it than the kind of average football fan would realise. Were you like given a test on your knowledge afterwards?
The test, actually, because the way they do it is peculiar. So we did the course and everything, and then I did the course in, it's about May, June kind of time, but then the test came in December that year. So you referee 5 games, and those 5 games, you'll, at least one of them, you'll have someone come to assess you, and then they will basically say you're fit to be a referee or you're not. And then at the end, if they deem you fit enough, well, not physically fit, but able to be a referee, then you go and do the test in December. And I mean, it's, you can't actually fail the test. You either pass or just retake until you get it. But I passed. I got quite a good score, which I was really pleased with. So yeah, that's.
So that sounds insane to me, that you're basically given 5 matches to referee, and they might turn up to one of them to assess you. Do they not worry about the standards in the other 4 matches? So they could be sending out people to a referee who don't really know what they're doing at that point. Is that possible?
I presume so. But I mean, you've done the course, so you've got that all that base level of understanding.
Right.
But I never got anyone come to see me in those 5 games even. So like, they have no, I've never had anyone watching me referee. So from what they know, I could be awful.
Doing the checks and balances. So I mean, obviously learning on AstroTurf with a few exercises is one thing, but I imagine going out and refereeing your first match is something completely different. Do you want to sort of take us through that experience? How old were the teams you were refereeing for a start?
Well, my first ever game, I actually had 2 games in a row. Luckily my first game was only under 11s, which is a bit easier. And, but it's a completely different thing, because also you're completely by yourself when you're refereeing. You've got no one else on your side, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, the 2 managers or more, the players, the parents. So it's a completely different thing. You're kind of out there by yourself.
And but, do you remember how that first match went?
Yeah, I was very nervous. Like, I was kind of, wasn't very confident in any of my decisions, but I kind of stuck everything, you know, to the rules, because I'd studied the rules just to, you know, make sure. But yeah, I was very hesitant to make decisions. I didn't want to make decisions. It was, but yeah, luckily the coaches were really nice. So that helps a lot. It just helps you feel confident and relaxed. So that makes a big difference.
Yeah. And then what about going forward? So are you still refereeing similar age groups? So under 11s for your first one, but are you doing older groups now?
It all depends on what game you get given, really. So I the highest I've reffed is under 14s, and the lowest is under 10s. But it tends to be, I say under 11s is the one I've done the most, which is handy because that is one of the easiest, I'd say.
Because you've got that kind of automatic authority over them because you're that bit older and bigger, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say when it gets kind of like under 12s, under 13s, they get a bit more, they start to speak their mind a bit more, they get, you know, also they try to get away with things a bit more.
Right, okay. The dark side of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's it like then? So the reason you got in touch, we were talking about what the things we could do to improve refereeing, and I spoke about a respect campaign, essentially, and that players shouldn't be allowed to abuse referees willy-nilly and get away with it, and that it should always be a yellow card for any abuse towards a referee, that kind of thing. Is it like that when you're in the middle of the pitch by yourself, as you say? Do you feel the pressure from the crowd and from the 2 teams?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because a lot of, like, for me, a lot of my enjoyment from refereeing as well comes from those good comments, those, you know, good decision ref, or at the end, good game. So the pressure of trying to, I guess, please both teams, it's quite a lot. And like, when those negative comments come, like, it's, people always say, like, oh, don't take it personally and stuff, but it's very hard not to take that personally, because, you know, you're the ref.
What kind of things are you talking about?
I did just kind of shouts from, like, the managers, you know, saying, you know, you're a bad ref, just like along those lines, that kind of stuff. Just general negative, I wouldn't necessarily say abusive, but potentially, like, not nice comments, and it kind of makes you second guess every decision, and that's when bad decisions creep in, because you're never confident in your decision making. Like, you're self-doubting, you're not thinking well.
And that's their intention. They're trying to manipulate the course of the game through getting into your head and making you think, right, I've got to give them something next time. That's what they want, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like I said, I play, and one game is quite a big cup game against, like, maybe the best team in our county. And our manager said to us, just appeal to the ref for everything. Like, get him on your side. And, like, while I don't think there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but it's not right. And I don't think a referee should ever be anyone that you can use to gain a competitive advantage in a game.
Yeah, absolutely. They should be completely impartial. And frankly, you know, we see referees treated so poorly in the Premier League, and that will naturally rub off at grassroots level. Have you ever got into any situations where you've been in arguments with managers or anything like that?
I wouldn't say an argument, but I've had, when you make a decision they don't like, you know, sometimes managers will, they'll kind of keep bringing that up, and they get on your backs a bit. And yeah, and also one thing I've found is that it's like the linesmen, who are normally just like some of the dads, they've been like weirdly like almost manipulative sometimes. Like, they'll come up to me at half time and they'll, you know, say, oh, watch out for that, like, number six, whatever, he's been putting bad tackles in, or I've been hearing stuff. Like, I'm seeing the game, I'm watching it, like, and just, I don't know, it's a weird one.
And what about from a sort of practical level, from a referee's perspective, do you feel like you always have a good grip of what's happening all over the pitch, or is it quite hard to sort of keep on top of everything?
It all depends on the game, I'd say, because when the games are, you know, they're kind of relatively nice, like, fair games, it's not too hard. You just have to keep that concentration up. But when it's a more kind of testy, fiery game, it's very difficult, because you have to be constantly watching out for, you know, tackles, little afters, and you have to keep in control of the game. As soon as you don't give decisions or stuff, like, those tackles will get out of hand, you know, you lose control of that game.
And do you have a particular style for dealing with that kind of thing? So we know that some referees, for example, quite like to stamp their authority in the game straight away, call up an early foul and maybe even give an early booking, that kind of thing, to show that kind of over-the-top challenge won't be tolerated. Are you that kind of referee, or are you someone who will have a conversation with the managers beforehand and warn them about the kind of things you'll be expecting?
I'll often have a conversation with the manager before a game or the players, and just say, like, I don't like to be keep blowing up for fouls. I like to try and keep the game flowing.
Mm.
But obviously, you need to, often to keep the game under control, you need to blow up for every little foul. And one of the pieces of advice on the course they gave us was that, like you said, at the beginning, you kind of blow up for every foul, because just to show that, you know, that kind of stuff won't be tolerated. Mm. And then as the game goes on, you can start letting things go a bit more.
That's really interesting that they actually train that.
Yeah,
because it's something that can frustrate fans, can't it? If you're watching and you're seeing kind of inconsistent decision making, where something's been called out at the start of a match but then towards the end it'll be let go, that can be annoying from a fan perspective, but it makes sense from a referee's perspective.
Yeah, it's just all about having that kind of, like I said, control over the game. And that's one thing, like you're saying about the fan and the referee perspective, it's very weird having been a fan and a player my whole life, well, not my whole life, but, and then suddenly being a referee, you see the game from a completely different point of view, I'd say.
So do you have quite a lot more sympathy now for Premier League referees when you're watching them do their job?
Yeah, for sure. But also, it also makes me more critical of some of their decisions.
Interesting.
Which I would never have guessed that. I would have always thought that it would, like you said, just make me more sympathetic. But it does go both ways, for sure.
But you've also got an appreciation of how difficult their role is. And I mean, the pressure at that level must be unbelievable. And when you got in contact with me, you said that the stress that it puts you under, even at grassroots level, means that you've basically got no motivation to even try. And I think the key thing is here that there are so many grassroots football matches going on at all levels, and the game is so reliant on people like you giving up their time to referee. What do you think could be done to attract more referees into the game?
It's a good question. I think I definitely do think, like you were saying on the last pod, some kind of respect campaign, because there isn't enough respect for referees. And I think having more people there, which I know is hard to do, but when it's just you there by yourself, like, it can be very intimidating and it's difficult. So having, I don't know, maybe just like one other person, you know, a fellow referee there, I think that can make a big difference.
Just someone there as backup for those difficult decisions.
Yeah.
Situations. So you mentioned that you get paid to do this, Sam. Do you mind me asking how much you get paid per match?
Yeah, sure. For anything below 11-a-side, so below under 13s, is £20 a game. And then anything 11-a-side is £25 a game. So it's very good pay. That is one of the main incentives for me doing it.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a 16-year-old, there aren't many jobs I would imagine that are that well paid for the length of time you're performing that activity. So presumably you have to get there a little bit before kickoff and stay a little bit after kickoff. But what we're talking, like 2.5-3 hours, something like that?
Yeah. Door to door, normally about that, yeah.
So it's a very good rate for that, isn't it? And that must be an incentive for other people of a similar age to you to get involved. But I guess, actually, it'd be interesting to know from you, what's the kind of typical, what's the average age of referees in these sorts of matches, you say?
There definitely are. There are quite a few people in my age now who have become referees. I mean, I'd say about four of my mates are referees. But there's kind of, I'll say there's either my age or older people. There's not a lot of middle ground, which I guess you'd expect because often, you know, that kind of age of people will have, you know, they'll have full-time jobs.
Yeah.
Whereas like people like me obviously don't, and maybe older people who are retired have then started refereeing.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? That they would have a bit more free time in their hands.
Yeah.
And what about other skills that you've learnt doing this? Would you say it's kind of developed you in any other ways aside from the obvious, i.e. just knowing the laws of the game?
Yeah, I'd say it's developed my speaking skills, I'd say, because I'm constantly meeting new people. Like before every game, I'll go shake the manager's hand, introduce myself, have a chat. Like, I'd say that's really good. Also just my kind of, it's that taking responsibility. Like, you know, you've got responsibility for that game. Like, I'd say it's definitely just almost improves me, like, as an all-round person. Yeah, for sure.
It's hugely valuable to you as a 16-year-old, you know, thinking about what the future might hold for you. But those skills are things that it's very difficult to pick up in school, really. So that's an amazing thing that you've done. We should also talk about school for you at the moment, Sam, because we're recording this, obviously, in the lockdown period. And you're 16, so were you due to take GCSEs?
Yeah, my first exam was going to be, well, 11th of May, so under 2 weeks' time.
And how do you feel about the fact that they've been cancelled?
It's still difficult to get my head around, if I'm honest. When the news first broke, I just, like, it took a long time to process, definitely, because for all my time at school, you know, you're kind of building up to that moment and you kind of know that's always going to be there, that it's always in the back of your mind, that's your ultimate goal. And then suddenly that is taken away from you and all that work you've done. It's not for nothing, but you're never going to actually put it into that final result. So it's weird for sure.
Do you feel for you personally that you're going to benefit from this, or are you worried that you won't do as well as you would have done if you'd had the exam?
I think for some subjects I could benefit, but because they're doing it on kind of what teachers say, predicted grades, mock results, and I've had good mock results, I got good predicted grades, like I work hard in lessons, so I should be fine. But you never know, do you? Because on that final day, like, it's a chance to really show you what you can do. You know, I would have put in, like, admittedly I haven't been revising all that much, but I definitely would have been revising a lot, you know, that kind of Easter period, and really built up for that exams. But I guess I'll never know. But you just have to trust that the teachers know you and give you a fair grade.
Very surreal, isn't it? And what's it been like as a 16-year-old in lockdown? Have teachers made things available for you online to study?
Yeah, recently they have. They sent out like emails of work, which I don't know if many people are doing, but it's because it's a very weird kind of situation, because like there's not really any work for us to do.
There's no motivation there either, because you've got no exams at the end of it.
Yeah, like a lot of the work they set out was kind of continuing our GCSE stuff, but like that's kind of, unless you've got nothing else to do, like that's pointless, because like I'm never going to do anything with that information.
Right. So do you know at this point what's next for you? Are you going to be doing A-levels?
Yeah. If I get the grades, which I should do. But that's definitely the next step for me.
Well, I hope you get the results you deserve, Sam, and I hope it all works out for you. And thank you for taking the time to talk to us about refereeing. It's interesting because when I talk about refereeing on the podcast, I'm talking about refereeing mainly from a Premier League perspective and a Football League perspective. But it goes down so much deeper than that. And, you know, if you walk to your local park on a Saturday morning, you'll see football matches going on. Every single one of those matches needs a referee. And, you know, there are people like you who keep the game running, basically. And I definitely think the game could do more to support young referees and people moving forward. If you did want to do this as a full-time career thing, would it be possible for you to progress?
Yeah, it's I know that there are kind of specialist training courses that you can get on to progress to high levels, and then it's just about working your way up that pyramid from there. So I think if it was something I wanted to do, then I'd say I could do it. I don't know how far I'd get, but I can't imagine it's overly competitive. I'm saying that out of ignorance, but I don't know. I can't imagine there are many referees, you know, really wanting to get to that top level.
So you'd have a good chance, basically.
I mean, I don't know, but I think if you stick at it long enough and you are, you know, a good referee and you work hard, then I don't see why not.
Lovely. Thanks, Sam. This has been great. And if people are interested in hearing more about your experiences, or perhaps they're considering becoming a referee themselves, is there anywhere they can get in touch with you?
My Twitter account. I can't think of the app off the top of my head. but could we put that like on the podcast release?
Absolutely, yeah. We'll put that in the notes from the podcast. Sam, thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me on. I've enjoyed it.
Nice one. Cheers, Sam.
You can find Sam on Twitter at Sam_Ricketts_.
Ahoy, ahoy, beloved listeners of the Extra Inch Wireless Show. And golly gosh, do we have a treat for you this Monday night on Discord. It's Tottenham Hotspur versus Leicester City in the 1961 FA Cup Final, Monday at 8 p.m.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So I'm joined by Carl Jones. Carl, hello.
Hello.
And you're here to tell us about a book that you've written about Spurs, about the 2018-19 season. You started writing it with one purpose in mind, but it turned out to be memorable for a different reason.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I wanted to write a book about our supporters' clubs around the world. And I kind of thought, when better to do that than at the start of the season when we were returning home. So last season appeared to be the season to write this book. And I contacted lots of supporters' clubs around the world and here in the UK over the summer. And then, of course, the first game was put back to remain at Wembley. And I kind of thought, well, that's a slight problem, but, you know, we'll get around that. And then it just continued to be extended and extended. And obviously what the season then turned into was just the most amazing, memorable season, certainly in my time of being a Spurs fan, in terms of going all the way to Madrid, which I was in Madrid, and it was just, even despite the result, the most wonderful, bittersweet weekend probably that I can remember. So I've really somehow accidentally managed to capture this time capsule of last season in kind of all its glory and all its frustration for lots of different reasons through the eyes and voices of these supporters clubs all around the world.
And what was the original motivation behind speaking to members of our supporters clubs?
So I, about 10 years ago, went on holiday to New York and watched a Spurs game in a bar in New York with the New York Spurs. And I think the concept of supporters clubs wasn't brand new by any means, but it was really starting to get off the ground, and certainly in places like the United States, where we were really beginning to flourish. And it just was amazing to, having been to the States before and, you know, pre-internet, and the only way you could find out the Spurs result was about 3 days later when the English paper arrived, you know, and it would be that would be the only way. To actually be sat in a bar in Manhattan surrounded by other Spurs fans with Spurs memorabilia up on the walls watching a match was just a really memorable moment. And then it happened again a couple of years ago, the first season we were at Wembley, and I'd actually given my season ticket up to my dad and son, and me and my wife were watching Spurs in LA again about 7 a.m. in the morning. It was the match we beat Liverpool 4-1, so probably not a great one to have missed, but I mean it was about 25 degrees at 7 a.m. in the morning, so it wasn't too bad in LA either. And I just sort of, again, just that exact thing of, it was 200 people probably in that bar. And as it got to the end of that season, I'd sit in my seat and I'd see all of the supporters clubs going round on the boards at the ground. And I just thought, there are people right now who are watching this in the middle of the night. They're watching it through all sorts of different mediums together for all sorts of different reasons. And it just intrigued me as to what those reasons might be. So I sort of decided I'd get in touch with one or two of them and see if there was a book in it. And thankfully there was.
Nice. And I've looked through some of your promo materials, and it sounds like you've got some great sort of individual stories from the different supporters of club groups as well. Do you want to tell us some of those? Obviously, you're not giving too many spoilers.
No, but absolutely, yeah. I mean, just some of the things that immediately jump out to me. I mean, there's a young man called Anthony in Lebanon, and Lebanon's a country that's had real issues, actually, you know, not pre-coronavirus as well. I mean, this guy's passion for Tottenham is absolutely unbelievable, and he's got a tattoo sort of on his rib cage, and he said to me very in passing, he said, you know, he says, when I get frustrated at Spurs, which I think most people would be able to relate to, he says, when I get frustrated with Spurs, I smash plates. And I sort of just said, you know, I queried this. I said, what do you mean? Is that, like, you know, like a metaphor? He said, oh, no. He said, I smash plates. He said, I just can't control my emotions. He said, so, you know, in the UK, you have the expenditure of going to the ground. I have it in plates. And he literally throws plates at the wall when Spurs are doing his head in. And that strikes me as quite a good way of sort of dealing with that. I think the other thing is there's supporters clubs who are doing amazing charity work and amazing work to Punjabi Spurs immediately spring to mind, UK based group, but you know, they took Ozzy Ardiles to India for a football camp with about 500 local kids. You know, the kind of outreach work that they're doing. I first actually spotted them. They did Bhangra dancing at half time in one of the matches at Wembley, which was incredible, seeing Bhangra dancing to Chaz and Dave. So I was kind of aware of them beforehand as well. And just the fans who, you know, will get up in the middle of the night and you know, I think when you start to go to Asia and Australasia, you know, a Sunday game at 4 o'clock here is 4 o'clock in the morning out there on a Monday, and people have got to get up for work. So just hearing the stories of people who watch Spurs at 3 o'clock in the morning against, you know, Hull, and then get up and go to work for the day, you know, knowing that kind of feeling of sometimes, you know, you maybe go to the pub or throw a few plates or do whatever you do to deal with when Spurs put us through it. And the idea of going to work and doing a 10-hour shift on top is something that most of us, at least in the UK, don't have to put up with. So yeah, they're just a few of the stories, but I mean, there's so many in there. It's incredible.
It sounds great. And I remember there was a time not that long ago where I think sort of foreign fans, as it were slightly looked down upon. People would sneer at them. And I think that's completely changed now. People have an appreciation of, as you described there, the lengths people will go to support the football club. And, you know, there's a whole host of different reasons why someone might support Spurs. It might be in their family. It might be that they've grown up a stone's throw from the ground. But it's such, Premier League is such a global thing now. And people get into football for all kinds of different reasons. And that doesn't mean that the passion is diminished in any way. Is that something you've seen as you've kind of researched this book?
100%, and I think you're absolutely right in terms of I think the Premier League in particular has had that thing of the tourist football fan, and I think that a lot of people, and there is certainly an argument where that just coming to watch the Premier League as a spectacle can sanitise the atmosphere a little bit, that you've not got those people with that passion. At the same time, I think it's such a sweeping generalisation to say that someone who isn't brought up 10 miles from the ground or whatever can't possibly be a fan, and I think that is absolutely what I've picked up, and you know, a couple of versions of that really of Oz Spurs, their chairman is a UK based fan who's lived out there for about 15-20 years, and actually he moved out there for love, started a family, but never actually felt at home there until he discovered Oz Spurs, and sat in a bar and watched the match with fellow fans, and now they have huge people come from all over Australia to meet every year and have one big weekend where they watch Spurs together and sort of have kind of a big celebration. And again, you know, it's a different kind of support. You know, the lengths that people are going to, it's a completely different kind of support. They are still traveling the length and breadth of their countries to watch games together. They're still spending the same. The commitment, as I say, to get up in the middle of the night to watch Tottenham is incredible. So yeah, I think that definitely struck me as just how passionate some of our fans are all around the world, and there are tens of thousands of them.
Lovely. And if people want to get hold of your book, probably have a bit of time on their hands at the moment, given that we can't leave the house, where might they find it? Where's best for you for them to buy it?
Yeah, so it is exclusively on Amazon. So you can get it on paperback. In the UK, it's £10, and it's free delivery with that in paperback, or £3.99 on Kindle. The best thing to do is just search "Be in That Number Book" and then probably my name or Tottenham. So my name's Carl Jones, and just sort of see if it should come up immediately there. It's it's doing okay at the moment. I've got a little screenshot that it's next to Greaves's book on Amazon, which is pretty good company to be in. So I'm quite pleased about that at the moment. So yeah, if people search it on there, it should arrive within about 5 or 6 days, and hopefully you'll even if you've maybe you're slightly sceptical about international fans, as we've touched upon, I would bet money that you would have a different opinion after sort of reading some of these stories and the dedication that people put into Spurs all around the world.
Fantastic. And just to go back to you, Carl, this isn't your only creative outlet. You're also a stand-up comedian.
I am indeed, yeah. On enforced hiatus as a stand-up comedian at the moment, unfortunately. But yeah, I'm a stand-up comedian, and I've been doing that for 8 or 9 years now. Absolutely love it. Get all up and down around the country. It makes it makes sort of planning Spurs games in around it quite a challenge, but I manage it. I plan Spurs in around absolutely everything, to be honest. So yeah, I'm missing being on stage, but this is putting my creativity into another direction at the moment, which is definitely helping.
Nice. Well, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and best of luck with the book. I hope it goes really well. It sounds like a fascinating story, and I do think you lucked out with the timing of the 2018-19 season. What a story.
It was touch and go for a while there, but thankfully this team didn't let me down in the end. So yeah, thank you very much.
Nice one.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davy Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.